to this reading of City View. I'm Barbara Martin. City View is an alternative monthly published in Des Moines, and we will be reading March episode number 2 for 2024. And now for the Civic Skinny by the City View staff. The topics that are addressed here are 22 million pounds of manure, $50,000 worth in RAGBRAI seed money, 2,096 cases of gonorrhea, and one Iowa Grammy, and a whole bunch of et ceteras. A recent study by theinnerbody.com ranked Des Moines 43rd in a list of the top 100 U.S. cities with the highest sexually transmitted disease rates. The ranking came from the amount of STD cases per 100,000 people. Des Moines was listed as having 942 cases per 100,000. The report named the total number of cases of some of the high-profile STDs. In Des Moines, they reported 34 cases of HIV, 3,817 of chlamydia, 2,096 of gonorrhea, and 134 of syphilis. How are Iowans handling debt? Better than Montana, but stops there. A wallethub.com, that's W-A-L-L, wallet hub, sorry, W-A-L-L-E-T-H-U-B.com, report ranked the states with the largest personal loan debt increases based on the company's proprietary consumer data from the third quarter in 2022. And to the third quarter in 2023. The average unsecured personal loan amount in Iowa increased by 15.7%, and this was the second highest percentage increase, only behind Montana at 31.2%. Although the percent increase was big, the average unsecured personal loan amount in Iowa was only $11,142, which places the Hawkeye State 21st on the list. Next, it pays to work in public administration, apparently. All-Star Home analyzed data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics' American Community Survey in 50-plus cities, and one of the key findings was the occupations with the highest median earning were lawyers and judges, which sat at $201,510. The report also found that the healthcare and social assistance industry has the highest employment rate, with more than 15,000 employees working in the industry. Those working in public administration also fared well. All-Star Home listed the highest earning industry on average to be in public administration, with a median income of $123,669. Next, Iowa produces more factory farm waste than any other state, according to an analysis by Food and Water Watch from new USDA data. Their analysis discovered that Iowa factory farm produced 109 billion pounds of waste annually, which is a 78% increase over the last 20 years. Food and Water Watch used data from the USDA's 2022 Census of Agriculture that was released in February of 2024. Other findings from this report include that the average factory hog farm in Iowa doubled in size from 2002 to 22, meaning there's an average of 6,868 swine per farm today, with each farm producing an average of 22 million pounds of manure annually. There are also three times as many mega dairies and five times as many factory farm dairy cows in Iowa than there were 20 years ago. Fewer than one-third as many family-scale hog farms and dairies exist today compared to 20 years ago. Fewer than one-third as many family-scale hog farms and dairies. Next, With Come&Go convenience stores purchased by Maverik in August of 2023 and its name up in the air due to these swirling rumors despite no definitive published statement on the matter, Skinny has a few questions. If, and seemingly when, Come&Go does make the name change to Maverik, what will happen to the ampersand that adorns so many stores? Some newer Come&Go stores have giant community art structures with the symbol on their properties, and many of their store door handles are also designed with ampersands. Could the huge ampersands find their way to the Papa John's Sculpture Park or serve as public art elsewhere? Could the ampersand door handles be given to another business in need of hundreds of new door handles? H&R Block, AT&T, F&G, A&W Root Beer, or our choice, B&B Grocery Meat and Deli. And that was a Civic Skinny. And we now move to the Political Mercury, written by Douglas Burns, who's of Carroll and a fourth-generation journalist and founder of Mercury Boost, a marketing and public relations company. Entitled, The Dehumanizing Formula of a School Shooting. We were all in the formula, the algorithm of horror that is a modern school shooting. Death for some, dehumanization for others. In covering the Perry school shootings January 4, what struck me was the hope-stealing realization that so many students and families seem prepared for their roles. The students I talked with, the parents, all seasoned in the last decades of school violence across the nation, had heard the scripts before, just not in this, their own city, their schools. It is collective marination in madness. They've been coached in catastrophe through consumption of hundreds of news accounts on shootings. We were in preordained roles, the grieving, the questioning, and the candle-holding in vigils. We were but digits in the modern American death formula, a parade without end as the polarized pursuits of solutions to the industrial kid-killing complex produce nothing. Those of us there were reporting or mourning or fighting to salvage the beginnings of community recovery. But the formula stole our humanity. I kept thinking of Orson Welles's sociopathic character, Harry Lime, in the film The Third Man, as he explained away his murderous scheme of stealing penicillin and diluting the life-saving revolutionary liquid from distributing it, killing innocents. In an early scene in the movie, Harry Lime gazes down from atop a post-World War II Vienna Ferris wheel at the people in the deep distance, so far away they look like little moving dots. Through a menacing stare, Lime delivers a devastating justification of dehumanization. Victims? Don't be melodramatic, Lime says coldly. Look down there. Tell me, would you really feel any pity if one of those dots stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money, or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spare? Free of income tax, old man. Free of income tax. The only way that you can save money nowadays. We did our time as dots January 4, for the formula is stronger than the biggest-hearted city. The algorithm has laid the mines. It's getting harder to step around them in America. Perry had always seemed so serene. Mental health Well, sure. We are in a crisis that manifests most awfully in these school shootings. The shattering of a sense of safety in what had been the most trusted and secure public spaces. The generations connecting small-town Iowa schools. The aroma of cafeteria pizza and sweaty gum-choked lockers replaced with the smells of gunfire, of death, and grievous injury. Guns? We are gun-soaked in America, to be sure. But the 17-year-old killer in Perry used a shotgun and a handgun, common to the American household, more so in rural reaches. Those weapons are here to stay. Who knows what evil lurked in the boy's head? When did he take pain to idea and then action? It can happen gradually, seemingly so obvious in life's rewind, or go like quicksilver in the TikTok age. The synapses barely fire before the bullets fly when the prefrontal cortexes are in the fetal position. No barrier to impulse, insanity. These killer kids, they don't have the most elemental of survival skills as a human being, what George Eliot called the memory of outlived sorrow, the knowledge and comfort that a bullying episode or a spurned love, or insult or other triggering moment will fade with time. The pain moving from a brain-battering screaming that won't end to a whisper to nothing but an occasional body shiver. A reminder that to feel pain and loss and grievance is to be human. But are we even still human in the way one assumes one to be human? Or has singularity arrived, the time when man and technology blend into one? Mass-scale social media and democracy, the safety of sanity of our kids, ourselves, cannot coexist. That is the reality, even if it does run up against the First Amendment and the tech gods. The aggrieving school shooters are so often narcissists quickly drawn into main character syndrome, in which they see the world and its people orbiting around them as dots to be erased in their internet-staged vengeance. They receive encouragement in dark reaches of the web and then broadcast the prelude to murders. Their redemption stories, their sick and misguided retrieval of agency on platforms owned by celebrated tech billionaires who are modern-day hairy limes, busy diluting our humanity, staring down at us from their Silicon Valley Ferris wheels. Facebook and TikTok, peddlers of a dueled society, have rendered us all dots. It's time to treat social media like we do alcohol or tobacco with our young people. No one younger than 18 should be able to have accounts on major social media platforms. The tech companies can police this, and law enforcement can police the tech companies. Treat them like convenience store clerks caught in strings selling smokes to teenagers, only with bigger fines. If the school killers have no place to post, they have less rationale to shoot. Such legislation has just passed the Florida House of Representatives with bipartisan support. Yes, it faces court challenges, but this is not a free speech issue, just a recognition that some unregulated mass-scale platforms have created one nation under TikTok. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis sees the bill as achieving an urgent end. He also expects it to change before passing. The goal, DeSantis said, is to get a bill to actually stick. Lives depend on this legislative navigation. The root of the evil, as is so often the case, is the seemingly banal. the social media where people post pictures of their restaurant dinners and birthdays and jolly times. But the horror and evil sprout and grow there, too. We know it. We must end it, says Douglas Burns. And we take a little look back to the history behind Des Moines St. Patrick's Day Parade. And you will be hearing this after the parade, but still the history remains. Who was St. Patrick? Why does he get a parade? And why is his parade so much fun? At the core of St. Patrick's Day, those with Irish heritage recognize St. Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland, and celebrate their Irish heritage. St. Patrick is heralded on March 17, which is thought to be the day he died. While Des Moines doesn't go as far as dyeing its rivers green, the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick have been putting together an evolving parade since 1979 that is steeped in a deep lore of its own. And this was put together by Coyote Williams. The Friendly Sons of St. Patrick. This society dates back to 1771, with the first chapter being formed in Philadelphia and eventually spreading throughout the rest of the country, including Hawaii. Bob Conley, alongside his brother Raymond, formed the chapter in central Iowa with six friends: Tom Mahedy, Phil Maloney, Jimmy Murphy, Rod Ryan, Jimmy Piazza, and Kevin Sullivan. The chapter organization started in 1974 and was formalized in 1976. Since then, the Central Iowa chapter has grown to more than 240 members and hosts events such as the St. Patrick's Day Parade, car shows, bike rides, and more. Interested in becoming a member? The application fee is $50. You must be at least 21 years of age and be able to trace your lineage back to Ireland, and you must submit the application at one of their monthly meetings. Those meetings are every second Monday of the month at the Mickle Center, 1620 Pleasant Street, in Des Moines. And dues are required to be turned in at the first meeting of the new year for existing and new members. For more information, you can visit their website at friendlysonsiowa.com or contact the current president, Josh Soliday, via email. And that's at president@friendlysonsiowa.com. Now, the parade's history. To learn about the parade's best moments in its nearly 50 years of existence, we talked with Colton O'Connor, a younger member of the Friendly Sons and this year's parade organizer, as well as two older members, Dick McGinn and George Hettinger, who are former presidents of the group. We met at Sully's Irish Pub in West Des Moines, a fitting location for such a conversation. Once the drinks started flowing, the stories did too. With the club starting in 1976 and the parade beginning in 1979, organizers wanted to celebrate beforehand. Hettinger and McGinn, they described a bus tour that took them around the city and hit most of the Irish pubs. While the club didn't have a float during the early years of the parade and instead simply carried a banner, the first float for the Friendly Sons was certainly one to remember. Quote, it was a pub that we built on a flatbed trailer, and we had swinging doors to get in, Hettinger said. You could walk along the front of the float and behind the float. We had a keg inside, and you just stepped in and walked in and grabbed a beer. The pub was built on a trailer owned by Red Dooley, a farmer from the Irish settlement in Cumming. This pub on wheels created a plumbing problem, but that had a quick and easy solution. Then we said, well, if we're going to have a keg in here, there's going to have to be a bathroom at some point. Dooley got out his cutting torch and cut a hole in the middle of the trailer and put a funnel in it, Hettinger said. It worked fine. Hettinger mentioned Frank Donovan, an iconic figure on the Des Moines golf scene. Donovan was a golf teacher. He owned the Ponderosa golf course and was known for his wacky golf tournaments where golf etiquette was thrown out the window. It was no surprise that he had a similarly outlandish idea for a float in the St. Patrick's Day parade. Donovan joined the Friendly Sons in the late 70s or early 80s, according to Hettinger. I don't remember what year it was, but he said that we should have a float with him on it, hitting plastic balls into the crowd, Hettinger said. I got a mat from one of the driving ranges, and then we put a pole on there and mounted a tubular pipe up in the middle of the trailer, put some hooks in there, and strapped him in. After acquiring a hoard of plastic golf balls painted green, Hettinger teed them up for Donovan, and off they went into the crowd. When Hettinger asked what they should do for people on the other side of the parade who were left out of the green plastic barrage, Donovan simply turned the club around and hit the balls in the other direction. For parade attendees' safety, O'Connor advises those participating in the parade this year to not throw or hit anything into the crowd, but to hand them instead. And then there's a cabbage toss. I know a guy personally. The guy might have been me or might not have been me, but we had a party bus and we threw cabbages out to people. Just something we did as the years went by. A young lady was wanting a cabbage. She had her hands out. She had her daughter in front of her and she got hit in the head, said O'Connor. A photo of O'Connor tossing cabbage heads into the crowd made the front page of the Des Moines Register before the practice was retired. Other objects sent into the crowd over the years, including green bagels supplied by Brugger's Bagels, and at the conclusion of the parade, a reception is held for all to attend. The reception location has changed through the years. It's been at Fort Des Moines, the old Hotel Kirkwood, and the Renaissance Des Moines Savory Hotel. The reception was also held at the Embassy Suites from 2001 to 2011, but has been at the downtown Marriott ever since. O'Connor remembered a potentially dangerous moment in the parade when the reception was still at the Embassy Suites, which is sandwiched between the Locust and Walnut Street bridges. Oh, I was probably 11 or 12. I rode a horse in the parade, he said. I remember riding across the river bridge, and I thought, he better not spook. He's talking about the horse. I wasn't scared one bit until we went across the bridge. Okay, as much fun as the parade is, the founders, board members, and organizers still emphasize safety. In recent years, the city of Des Moines has required a fence to be installed around the parade route. Despite the general public's thoughts about St. Patrick's Day being a drinking holiday, that isn't necessarily the case for the Friendly Sons. It's still a cultural event, and people associate it with a drinking event. But at the end of the day, we're celebrating our heritage, and we're celebrating our holiday, O'Connor said. Drinking may be a part of it, but that's not necessarily what we're advertising. And people do keep their drinking under control. They don't get out of hand, said McGinn, or McGinn, M-C-G-I-N-N. It's also early enough in the day for them not to, joked Hettinger. And how about the weather impact? With March being a time of year when Iowa can't decide if it's done with winter and ready to head into spring, Mother Nature sometimes interferes with the parade, but not enough to stop it. Last year, Des Moines experienced bitter cold the day of the parade. O'Connor recalled the temperature being 4 below zero when we arrived at the setup of the beer garden at 5 a.m. The news called us and they said, "Hey, we're here. Where are you at?" I said, "I'm in my car. I ain't coming out there," O'Connor said. Other times, the weather has been much kinder. The year the parade route took them down from the Capitol building in 2012, the temperature was 80 degrees. Now, the parade is taking a new route in 2024, they did, starting on Robert D. Ray Drive, heading west down Grant Avenue. The parade will continue with long-standing traditions such as the flag raising and the breakfast before with members of the Friendly Sons. O'Connor stresses to be safe and respectful to everyone during the parade. "I want as many people to be there as possible," he said, "and I want everybody to be safe, respectful, and to have a good time. So, respect everybody. Respect the people next to you, or if you're in the parade, respect the people who are participating in the parade. Most importantly, I want everybody to have as much fun as they possibly can and to just support the club. Buy as many raffle tickets as you can and have as much fun as you safely can on that day." And I hope that all was well for that parade. And that does it for this second episode of City View. We've been reading from the March issue. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Print Handicapped. And if you have any questions about this or any other IRIS program, just give us a call, 515-243-6833, 243-6833. Thanks for listening.